You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. $2.5 billion and mental health care for 250,000 vulnerable Michiganders. That's what's at stake as Lansing figures out just who will control the state's behavioral health system. Advocates say that patients and their families overwhelmingly want it to stay in the public's hands. The health plans say they can do it more efficiently and effectively. Here's Dominic Pallone, the executive director of the Michigan Association of Health Plans, the advocacy group, speaking on Stateside about the benefits of the more market-based approach to care.
Those that produce the highest quality would have the members enrolled into it, and ultimately the individual itself themselves would have the choice whether or not they wanted to be enrolled in a managed care plan or whether they wanted to maintain under a fee-for-service based system, and they'd be able to choose between multiple managed care plans throughout various regions of the state.
The health plans have been pressing lawmakers for more control of the billions of Medicaid dollars that go to mental health services annually in Michigan. So far, key legislators have responded favorably. A joint examination by Stateside and the Michigan Campaign Finance Network looked into just how campaign contributions might be playing a role. Craig Mauger of the Michigan Campaign Finance Network is here with us, and so is Stateside's executive producer, Joe Lindstroth. What made you decide to look at campaign contributions now?
The governor last budget cycle proposed this shift to the health plans, and the advocates and the community mental health organizations kind of got pretty angry. And so the legislature said, kind of put the brakes on it, ask for a committee to be formed, a work group to be formed with all of these parties involved to come up with a plan. Now, they've been meeting for the last 14 months, to come up with ways of pilot projects to how to integrate behavioral and mental health care. They came out with a report earlier this year with more than 70 recommendations to the legislature. It did not include handing things over to the health plans like the governor requested. And so the health plans kind of said their voices weren't represented in this group. And so they kind of took wrote a minority report and then started going directly to legislators themselves to argue for their cause. And so when we saw this rift happening and the battle line sort of being drawn here, I thought it'd be a good time to look at, you know, the tools being used by these two groups to persuade legislatures into making decisions.
All right, it's time to talk about where the money comes in, and for that we go to Craig Mauger. Craig, you looked at the contributions coming into legislators' campaign funds and PACs. So first off, who are the main senators in this debate, names that we need to know?
Yeah, definitely the main senators in this debate are one, Jim Marlowe. He's the chair of the subcommittee that creates the first draft budget proposal for the department under which these programs fall. Senator Mike Shirky is another important name, because he is a big player on healthcare issues in the Senate. And then just Senate leadership and House leadership. Jim Ananick is the Dem leader in the Senate. The Republican leader in the Senate is Arlen Meekoff.
What'd you find when you looked at the money they received?
Yeah, definitely. So we looked at the giving over a period of 8 years, and we chose 8 years to kind of show the relationship over a long period of time between groups and state lawmakers. And we found that Jim Marlowe had received the second most money from health plan donors of all state individual state legislators, and Mike Shirky had received the most money of all individual state lawmakers from health plan donors. And these are two of the most crucial lawmakers working on these healthcare subjects.
And Senator Shirky, what kind of money are we talking about?
Yeah, these are donations, some small, some rather large, to his candidate committee, to his leadership PAC, the PAC that he operates, and to another. We also looked at this administrative account that he's connected to. These donations can range from a couple hundred dollars to one single donation of $25,000 that Senator Shirky got just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, talk about the timing of the donations.
In subcommittee on April 18th, Senator Shirky sponsored the crucial amendment that kind of stated in the budget that the state is going to move forward toward a fully integrated system under the health plans by 2020. That was on April 18th. The next day, on April 19th, his leadership PAC reported in the campaign finance disclosure receiving a $25,000 individual contribution from insurance executive John Cotton, who is tied in an executive with Meridian Health Plan. Senator Shirky says that the timing of that was coincidental, that he's seeking to be in Senate leadership next session, and John Cotton wanted to support him in that, and that's the reason the check happened, and the check happened right before the end of the fundraising period, which I believe was April 20th. So he was kind of explaining that as the timing and really dismissing the idea that that was any way or any of these contributions are somehow directly tied to what he is doing on this integration matter.
And Cindy, I asked Kevin Fisher about this, the executive director of the National Alliance of Mental Illness Michigan, about Senator Shirky's amendment. Here's what he said.
He has provided absolutely no rationale as to why he would want to turn his back on the citizens of Michigan and hand the health plan $2.5 billion. And unless there's some other rationale that he can bring forth, I would be willing to assume that campaign contribution plays a role.
Moving over to the House, the Appropriations Committee held a hearing last week, and its chair, Republican Laura Cox, introduced an amendment that would give the health plans control of a pilot project integrating behavioral and physical health care, and it passed on a straight party line vote. Craig, did Representative Cox receive any contributions from the health plans?
Yes, she did. She was the sixth highest individual recipient of health plan donations that we tracked. She was the number one highest of all House members. You got to keep in mind, we were looking over a period of 8 years, so that's going to lend an advantage in our tracking numbers to senators who've been in Lansing longer. I mean, Representative Cox has been here. This is her second term in Lansing, so she's had less time to raise money, and she's already taken in $34,650 from health plan donors.
Now, the health plans weren't the only ones giving money. What about contributions from the mental health boards? What'd you find there, Craig?
Yeah, the mental health boards have definitely given donations as well. The community mental health boards have a PAC that has been writing contributions regularly over the past 8 years as well. The mental health boards PAC has given $40,600 directly to state lawmakers over the last 8 years, which is a rather large figure, but nothing compared to what the health plans have done.
Joe, what are the advocates and people from the community mental health agency saying about all of this?
Well, you know, we've been covering this, Cindy, as you know, on stateside for the last 14 months. And Kevin Fisher from NAMI, Michigan, has been on our show a number of times, and he always kind of said he was cautiously optimistic about this process. These work groups were moving forward. They were, you know, everyone was kind of staying on board. They almost actually walked away last September. Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly came in and kind of brought them back to the table. But again, he repeated this phrase, cautiously optimistic. And so when they finally kind of came with this report, after all of this work over 13 months or so, to then kind of have the health plan say, you know what, forget it. We're going to have our own plan. We didn't feel represented here. There's disappointment. There's frustration from a number of the advocates that I spoke to. On the community mental health side, I think there is some disappointment there as well. I spoke with Tom Watkins, who's president and CEO of Detroit Wayne Mental Health Authority, and here's how he put it.
This shouldn't be about who's making the best and the biggest political contributions. At the end of the day, it's not those people that we're talking about. This is somebody's mother, someone's father, someone's brother, someone's sister, someone's whose life literally is going to depend on the care that the legislature is going to make. That is not something that should be up for the highest political bid. I think that would be a travesty.
I think it is worth noting. It is next to impossible to draw a straight line between campaign contributions and lawmakers' decisions on this issue or any issue. So, Craig, what if these lawmakers just feel that the health plans are the best way to go?
Many of them do feel that way. I mean, they have made arguments. Senator Shirky has argued. I talked to him this week. He made the argument that he thinks that there could be savings achieved by having the health plans do this, and he thinks the health plans have done a great job for the state in what they're doing currently, and he kind of basically says, why not push that success over to this behavioral health side of things as well? I think the contributions do point to, however, relationships that these groups have built with lawmakers over time. And really, this issue is a case study in how Lansing works. These state lawmakers are making decisions that directly impact businesses' bottom lines and that directly reach into people's lives in the state. And at the same time, there are hundreds of thousands of dollars in lobbying happening and hundreds of thousand dollars in campaign contributions changing hands. And all of this intermingles and mixes around, and eventually the lawmakers are going to arrive at a decision, and only they really know what is driving them to make that decision.
I think it also calls into question kind of the whole point of the work group and why it was set up to begin with. If most of these legislatures felt this way already, why have the payers and providers, the advocates, and the health plans meet 45 to 50 times? Why bring in over 1,000, 1,200 people from the public and get their take on these things if this was the way they were going to go anyway?
Well, you can find the detailed story of all of this at the stateside page at michiganradio.org, or you can go to the Michigan Campaign Finance Network site, mcfn.org. Craig Mauger, Michigan Campaign Finance Network, and Joe Lindstroth, stateside, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.